parenting advice on Talk About.
Now, Margaret Gilbert, our parenting coach, is here in studio with us. And you're very welcome, Margaret.
Thank you very much, Deirdre.
Good to see you. You're in good form?
Good form. How wouldn't you be with this fine weather?
Absolutely. And long may it continue.
It's beautiful.
Margaret, you're going to talk to us a little bit about something a bit different today. You're going to talk a bit about emotional intelligence and how that can lead to self-awareness and leadership skills and all of that. What exactly would you define as emotional intelligence, and why is it relevant to parenting?
Yeah, I suppose to be emotionally intelligent, we're aware of our feelings, our emotions as they arise. We're aware of what they mean to us and how they shape our behaviour, either good or bad. You know, so our emotions and our feelings tell us lots of stuff, but they can be a lot unconscious. So we can be reacting to an awful lot of stuff instead of responding. So if we want to make better leaders for our children, if we want them to get on in life, if we want them to have good relationships and all that kind of thing, we need to place as much importance on emotional intelligence as IQ in schools. All we're teaching in schools is get your leaving, get a good job. But at the end of the day, happiness in life depends on feeling good about yourself, having good emotions and feelings, understanding them, being able to regulate in them, and being able to get on around you, whether it's at school, whether it's at college, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's in a family situation. So I suppose it always comes back to parenting. When we have children that are dysregulated, if we haven't high emotional intelligence ourselves, we get dysregulated with them. So that leaves two people very dysregulated trying to interact and trying to reason and relate. But you can't actually do that if we're dysregulated. So it's all about calming. The parent is the older person, the person in charge. So we need to anchor, calm ourselves, catch our feelings, our emotions, regulate ourselves. Then we can support the child to co-regulate with us. We're providing that safe space for them to co-regulate with us. And then we can relate to them, talk about their feelings and emotions. Then we can shift on to problem solving. How are we going to fix this? How are we going to move it forward? But this actual anchor function, the regulation, is not recognised as being important.
Give me an example of a situation where a parent can react rather than show emotional intelligence with a child.
Yeah, so I suppose a young person coming out from school that has had a hard day, a tough day, a long day. All children, especially secondary school, they've long hours there. And they come out and they're really upset and they're saying, oh, Mrs. So-and-so was at me today and banged the door of the car. And stop that. You can't do that. You can't be saying that about your teacher. You have to have respect for your teacher. How could she just be at you and not at other people? Or we could go the opposite and say, that's not okay for the teacher to be talking to you like that. I'll go in tomorrow. I'll phone her when I go home. I'll sort it. So therefore, you have a child that's very upset, that's going through a tough day. All he wants is us to regulate and calm and say, would you like a cup of tea? That sounds hard for you. It sounds tough for you. Would you like us to sit and talk about it? Tell me what happened. Do you know, what would you like to do about it? And often when we issue an invitation like that to a young person to discuss their feelings and things around it, the problem actually goes away. Do you know,
they just needed to vent, you mean?
To vent.
Yeah.
And to be listened to and to be heard. Not someone to fix it, to sort it, to mend it, to tell us what we will do, to jump in. All they want is us to regulate. They're dysregulated enough. So if we start jumping in, shut the door, then you have two escalating up. You have two dysregulated.
Two people on high door.
Two people on high door.
Yeah.
And the very minute we say to young people, you should, you must, you can't, then that's like a red rag invitation to escalate more.
Yeah, and particularly with teenagers, because they can kind of press our buttons so much, I think.
And that's exactly it. When they're dysregulated, our buttons get pressed very easily because we don't want to see them distressed, we don't want to see them upset, and they can say things in the heat of the moment. Oh, you're the worst parent that ever was, or anything.
I hate you.
So right in that minute, they probably do. But 2 minutes later, 3 minutes later, they don't. It's only something that's thrown out in the heat of the moment. But if we latch onto all them triggers, then you have us going in a roundabout all day long. You can't say this, you can't do that. Next thing, how dare you tell me you hate me? Don't I do this for you? Don't I do that for you?
Yeah, because you particularly find with smaller children, younger children, that they might make a big deal out of something. We'll say when they come home from school, something that happened with the teacher, with a friend, whatever. And they vent, and you think it's a huge big deal because of the way they expressed it. But an hour later, you're still thinking about it, and they've forgotten.
Exactly.
You know, they just needed to get it out and it's gone.
That's it. You know? And what they need to be able to do is recognise these are feelings and emotions inside me that come and go, and I can learn to manage them. Because that blowout they have at home there, and if we interact in it, it's a blowout, it's not appropriate when they're 18 in a workplace or in a school or a college. So it's about when they're acting out that we take deep breaths. What calms us, what regulates us, so that we can deep breathe and we can calmly respond to the child, get down to their level. If it's a teenager, sit at a table with them, a chair, make a cup of tea. If it's a young person, would you like to sit near me on the couch? You sit down, you know. You sound very angry. You look very upset.
So you're kind of validating their emotions.
You're validating their emotions and their feelings, that it's okay to feel this way. It's okay. But what we want to shift on to is help them to regulate then. How can you manage? What would help you right now? Would you like to cuddle your teddy? Would you like a blanket on the couch? I suppose our tendency in the past has been to offer food. Come on, we'll have a slice of cake. We'll treat ourselves with, just to get them out of that emotion. But that teaches emotional eating. When I'm upset, when I'm stressed, I'll eat something. Treat. When I'm upset, a treat. Treat a warm hot water bottle, a sit in the garden. Would you like a hug? Would you like a cuddle? Would you like me to jump on the trampoline? What will help you to actually manage this emotion so that you can move on?
So it's kind of like giving them back the power and saying, what would you like to do now that might help you with this anger or whatever?
Yeah. Because an awful lot of parents are going out to therapies and things, and they're learning all these tips and tricks for teaching young people how to manage their behaviour. But it's the young person that needs to manage them. We can't manage their feelings for them. So they need to know, I'm jumping on the trampoline for 20 minutes before school every morning to regulate me, to calm me. And you're trying to teach them then, what does my body feel like after 20 minutes on the trampoline? Does it feel calm? Does it relaxed? Or is it wiring me? Some children jumping on a trampoline would make them hyper. Some children need it to calm their systems. So parents are the same. Different things help us to regulate, to put down that anchor and respond to children instead of reacting.
Okay, and let's say you are somebody who reacts and you get involved in every drama and you feed all the emotions. How can that sort of be a bad thing for the child in later life? Is it like you were saying earlier that they go into a workplace or college or wherever and they expect everybody to fix things for them or what?
But the parents have role modelled it. So when the children meet situations that have challenged them at past in the home, and these were the reactions that were gutted, they'll presume these reactions will help us as well. So they will behave in the same way in different situations across different places, because that's what they have learned from home. We want children to learn problem-solving skills, conflict management skills, but we can't do them unless we're in a calm state. So we need the children to learn shouting at things, getting angry, cross. All emotions are good emotions, but the right place at the right time. So if you're inside the workplace and you're highly stressed and angry, that's not the place to deal with that emotion. You need to be able to regulate yourself, to come down, to address the issue, not start shouting and roaring. If you're to be a leader in a workplace, if every time you get stressed you start shouting at the staff and giving out to them, the same as what happened at home when there was conflict or what have you, then you'll think that model of leadership is okay. But we know that to lead people, calmness. We can still be stressed, we can still have anxiety ourselves, but if we're emotionally intelligent, we can manage it. I'm really stressed here, I'm feeling anxious going into that meeting, but what do I do to calm myself? Just say, coming in here now today, Deirdre, I sat in the car for half an hour. I read my few notes. I took a few deep breaths. I enjoyed the sun. Because if I came in here running and late, I'd be dysregulated. I'd be quite capable of saying anything.
But that might be a great radio show, Margaret.
But, you know, it's about knowing how my body responds and reacts and being able to calm myself so I can be in the right feeling and emotional state in the right place.
So you need to let the child express the emotion. You're not advocating bottling up the emotions. No. But I presume then that they reach an age where they realise that throwing a wobbly over every small thing isn't the right way to do.
Yes.
But you let them let it out of their system while they're young, but you just don't validate it.
That's it.
You do validate it, but you don't make it worse, take it up another option.
Yes, you don't take it up another option. And what you begin to teach them is, when you feel that way, how can you manage it? You feel that way. It's not about you can't feel that way. The very minute we say you can't, a child, you're actually disrupting their internal system that's telling them that something has upset them and angered them. So we never say you can't feel that way, or your sister is never that way, or your brother's never that way. But all we're saying to them is, you're angry, you're upset. That's okay. That's okay. How can you manage it now? What can you do that'll bring you one step down closer to where you're at your best, which is your baseline? Do you know, if we did number line from 0 to 10 and number 5 was our baseline. So if we get in a real tiz-was and we go up to 10, what can I do now, or what can you do to bring you down one notch? Just to start bringing yourself down a little bit. So again, as time goes on, they'll use them strategies and tips. Some people, deep breathing doesn't work for them. It might raise more anxiety, where some people might need a walk, some people might need a fidget ball, or some people just sit in their hands, or whatever it is that helps us to move on from that state so that we can be in the right state, in the right place.
But taking them off for an ice cream isn't the way to go either.
Not always. Sometimes. It has to be balance, alternated. If we offer food every time there's upset, then a child learns that food is a way to regulate yourself. But it's not. It's an addiction, if you like, an addiction of choice. So that when we feel upset, we eat food. It helps us feel better for a while, but then we feel awful afterwards, and it brings the weight problems and all those kind of things. So it's about a balance. There has to be something like a hot water bottle, a blanket, a cuddly tie, a hug, fidgets, a jump on the trampoline. What helps you?
Whatever it is that works for you.
Yeah.
Margaret, we'll take a quick break. This is really interesting. I'm sure there are parents out there who have questions. As Margaret and I said in her last slot, I think during the summer holidays, a lot of these issues can come to the fore because we're spending more time with our children out of school term. So if there's an issue that has arisen in your family and you want Margaret's advice, she is a parenting coach and a life coach. Send your questions in to us. You can text or WhatsApp on 083 300 3300, and if you prefer to phone us, you'll find us on 066 712 3666.
Parenting advice on Talk About.
Now, we're talking about emotional intelligence and fostering that in children. Margaret, we have a question for you, which I'll come to in a moment. But just following on from what you were saying there before the break, what about a parent or guardian, whoever the child is living with, coming home after a bad day or coming home after a row or with somebody or whatever? Is it a good idea for the child to see the parent venting about giving out about everyone at work and they're all doing this and they're all doing that or whatever? Or should you keep that from a child? Or is it how you express it that is key?
Yeah, how you express it is key, because all parents are human. So when they do come home and they're stressed and they're giving out or whatever, it's very important to talk that through with the child. Say, I've had a tough day at work, I'm venting here, I'm giving out, nothing to do with you, don't be upset over it. I suppose what children need to hear when we're venting strong emotions is that it's not them, it's not their fault, that we're just letting off a bit of steam, and that I will be okay. I'll be fine in 10 minutes once I let it all out. But I suppose we have to make sure as well that the content of what we're saying is appropriate for a child to be listening to. But what I'd say to parents is, if you find yourself dysregulated from work, what you need to do before you face into your second job. Well, it's probably their first job because they've started it in the morning, they've gone to work and now they're home again. So face into your evening's work at home. What do you need? Do you need a cup of tea? Do you need to sit down for 15 or 20 minutes? Do you need to go out for a bit of a walk before you come into the house? And explain that to the children. I need 15 minutes so I can switch my mindset from my work into my home. Do you know what I mean? Because what often happens, if we're not aware of our feelings, there might 10 things during the day have rattled us, and we, our temperature might be rising like a simmering pot. So there might be a give out at work, there might be something not working right, there might have been 15 complaints there. So by the time you come home, you're up to your 9 in your scale, and then a child says something out of the way, then we lose the plot and we simmer over. So if we catch them as they're happening and notice them and just say, what will I do now to regulate myself? Or, do you know, how will I relax? I'll take a few deep breaths. And often it's, I'm going to let that go with the bed weather today. I'm not going to trace that thought now. Let it go. It's nothing got to do with me. That's his problem. So we need to manage ourselves as we go through the day so that when we do go home, we're more regulated. But also if we find ourselves dysregulated, role model that to the child. I'm taking time out here now. I'm a bit wound up after work all day. It's been tough. I'm taking 15 minutes quietness, cup of tea. I'll come back to you then and we'll do whatever we need to do.
Mm. We've a listener who says they have a 10-year-old daughter who seems to be very emotional and cries all the time over small things and silly things, and they're wondering for advice. You know, how does that feed into what you were talking about?
Yeah, I suppose there's two things there we have to be very careful with: small things and silly things. If we're telling a child that her little fears or the little things she gets upset over are silly, that's giving her a very negative message. So when she is upset, sit with her. Just listen to her. If she's crying, I'm crying because my doll broke or whatever it is, just hear her. Repeat her words back to her. Listening is the greatest gift we can give the children. Validate her feelings. I see you're very upset. You're crying. You've tears coming down. You're red in the face. And whatever she says, because this don't work. And say, well, how can we sort it? Do you know, what can you do about it now? So you're trying to give the young person, you validate their feelings, never call them silly, because something that's very big to you might be very small to me. And to young children at 10 years of age, if we say them, that's silly, it's giving them a message. So veer away from them, just say, you're really sad, you're hurt, whatever the child is saying, feed their words back and sit with them and say, how can we manage this? How can we manage this? This happens a lot. Maybe you need to plan a little bit around it so it won't happen to you again.
Yeah, because I think as parents, we have an expectation. I mean, obviously toddlers and very young children cry. But particularly with boys, I think they reach a certain level, but girls as well. And you kind of, you think that they shouldn't be crying over stuff at that age, that you've now reached a certain level and now you can't be crying over everything.
Yes. Yes.
But is that wrong to think that?
It is, because if a child is crying, they're upset over something and they have feelings inside them that we have to validate. Because if we say that's silly or whatever, then the child is beginning to question themselves. This has really upset me, but somebody else is saying it's silly. So you sit with them and you problem solve with them. What upset you? Why did you start crying? And you're trying to teach the child the skill when they meet the situation again that they can manage it better so they won't get upset over it. I suppose a lot of children get overwhelmed by their feelings and overwhelmed by having a load of stuff to do and things, but it's about teaching that young child what helps calm her when she is upset, what helps her to regulate again, thus so that she comes back to her baseline, that she's okay again, and is teaching her how to manage that.
A listener was in touch now. I want to apologise to the listener, first of all, because your text, your query for Margaret came in quite garbled, and sometimes we get half a sentence running into another sentence. But I gather, I'm trying to decipher this, Margaret, but I gather that this parent has 4 children and runs a small business, or did run a small business, and says that they and their partner, I don't know whether it's from a man or a woman, have always sort of instilled a work ethic in their children, but that every time they try and get the teenagers, it's teenagers now, late teens, to do anything around the house, there's a song and dance, and they're told by the teenagers, you're always on my case. And they're just wondering, like, what can we do to make these lazy teenagers reap the rewards of all our hard work? We do chat to them, says that listener. Now, I hope I'm paraphrasing that correctly, but that's what I've deciphered that the person is asking me, Margaret.
Well, I like the phrase by the children, you're always on my case.
Yeah.
So when we listen intently to children, they tell us what the problem is a lot of the time. So the parents are always on about this to them, and it's probably going on and on and on. So maybe it's about sitting them and agreeing with them a contract, what they're going to do for their jobs, and give them a time frame. Not you have to have it, do it now or do it then, but that they have tomorrow, they have the lawn to cut maybe, that is done by 6 in the evening. So they can go into their own style. Might be rushing the last minute in the evening to get the job done, or you might have people that are very organised, I'll do that first thing in the morning. So it might be agreeing with them. But also, what are they getting for nothing already? Have they access to Wi-Fi unlimited? Have they access to phone? Is there any sense that we have to work for a living to earn all them things? Because if children are getting them automatically, they don't see the need to work. They don't see the need to contribute. So I look very much as, what are they all getting for nothing, that there's no conditions attached at the minute, and sit down and draw up a contract with them. These are the tasks you're expected to undertake in the home, and our values are that we have a strong work ethic here, and you're involved in that. But what are the rewards then for it for them? That you get your €20 of credit for your phone a week, or that, you know, you get so many hours of internet access and things, instead of they come and thinking they get all these automatically and don't actually realise they cost money. So is the parents actually giving them a lot of income and a lot of things in return for their contribution as well?
But if you've already gone down the road of allowing them have all this access and pocket money and phone credit and all that, is it hard then to go back on it and to say, well, from now on, you know, unless you do X, Y and Z, cut the lawn, whatever, the internet is cut off or the phone credit isn't coming up or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, is that okay to do that?
Well, especially with teenagers, we'd sit with them and I'd say very clearly, this is a problem. Mm-hmm. We have a very strong value in this house, a very strong work ethic, and we feel everybody in the house should row in. It's not happening. Ye say we're always on your case. We've heard them. You're always on our case. So what's your solution? What's your solution?
Put the ball back in their court.
Put the ball back in their court and sit down with them, even if they come up with smart answers. Right, okay, we'll try it for a week, we'll try it for a fortnight, but if it's not working, we'll be back here again. So the parents can say then, if it's not working again, well, we give you X, Y and Z. We need to listen to the reasons why they're not doing it first. And they might say, you won't pay us, or, you know, I don't want to get up, and, you know, whatever it is. We must listen to their reasons, but then it might give us the avenue to open up. These are all the privileges that you are getting in the house. So if we're not getting something back in return, maybe we need to review what you're getting.
Yeah, that sounds fair enough,
I think. But we have heard them and we have listened to them and sat with them and asked them for their solution.
I know we're over time now, Margaret, but this is, we're just getting a lot of reaction. Listener says, regarding venting in front of children, I taught in a primary school. I once had a young boy, and any time school in the olden days came up, he would tense up, fists clenched and go white with anger. His dad having told him of his own bad experience at school, it had a profound effect on that little boy. Be mindful of it. I see where that person is coming from. So they... and I've heard that from teachers as well, that now I don't think it happens as much anymore, but sometimes if you had a bad experience at school, you can kind of say, oh, I hated school and I was afraid of my teachers, and then the child can actually go in with that expectation.
But what's missing from that piece is, what did the dad do to demonstrate to the child it's okay to have these feelings, but this is how I managed it. This is how I helped myself come down so that I could go into the classroom comfortable going forward. So when we are venting to children, make sure it's appropriate and like that it's not going to rub off them. But we're teaching them the skills, we're role modelling it. I had that bad experience at school, but I managed it by deep breathing, by relaxing. I spoke to an adult, I got a hug, whatever I needed to do it, and teaching the child to do the same. If you're stressed, anxious, or any place, what are your tools for managing it?
Exactly. Margaret, just finally, Lily is in Ballindlana. I'm not sure where Ballindlana is.
Causeway.
It's Causeway. Yeah. And she says, I could listen to Margaret all day long. Everything she says is right. Well, isn't that nice to hear? Isn't that lovely to hear?
Yes, yes. Thank you, Lily.
There you go. Lily is a satisfied customer. Listen, we've gone way over time, but it's always great to chat to you and to have you on the programme. And listen, we'll check in again with you in August. But thank you so much. Oh, just to remind people how they can contact you, of course.
I'll just give my own mobile there, 087-174-7813.
And you also have a website.
I have a website, margaretgilbertlifecoach.com.
For loads of common sense. Margaret, thanks a million. We'll chat to you in August.
Deirdre.
All going well. We'll take a break, folks. Lots more to come on today's Talk About.